Good evening, everyone. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. If you're new here, please subscribe to the channel. Got quite the lineup tonight. We got my friend Jeremy Todd. How are you doing tonight, Jeremy?
Doing so well. Having me read.
Glad to have you back on. And then we've got my ex-husband. We're trying to work this out. We're still civil. We're still talking to each other. How are you doing tonight, Clint?
The spirit of Alex Jones flows through my fucking veins, Reed. That's how I'm doing.
All right. And then our fourth guest tonight, he is the host of Part of the Problem. He's the most consistent motherfucker you know. The next president of the United States, comic Dave Smith. Tell us something,
gentlemen.
Good, what's good, brother?
Save us, Dave. Save us. What are we going to do?
Oh, please. Listen, let me tell you right now, I'm not saving any of you people, all right? You're on your own. That's how honest a politician I am. I'll look you right in your face and tell you, you are screwed.
So we're obviously all here tonight to talk about sex work, right? Or no, yes. Actually, Joe Biden just passed this crazy executive order. So it's mandating that all federal employees and all contractors of federal employees get the vaccine, and then all private companies with 100 employees or more need to either provide negative tests for COVID every week or vaccinate all their employees. So that's what we're here talking about. So what do you think, Jeremy? What's your thought?
Well, I just full disclosure, started a new job on Tuesday with a company that has over 100 employees. So, but the only thing I've heard since getting there is, thank God you're here. We can't find anybody good. There's the hiring market is just impossible right now. They are woefully understaffed and overworked. So try it. Let's see. I don't think my company is alone. So that's where I'm at in my head on this. And it's just another step in the direction that we all knew this was going. I did not see OSHA. Though, and that's what's interesting about these politicians, right? They can always pull something from behind that you aren't thinking about, and you're like, oh, fuck. They can outmaneuver you somehow in this power struggle. So,
yeah. I'm not even sure OSHA is allowed to do this. I don't know if you guys know any more about that than I do, but I don't think they have any vaccination authority with anything else that I know of. I mean, that could be wrong, but.
There was something I read. Hold up. You guys talk while I pull it up. But there's like it. They can create this emergency situation where if it's a toxic environment or they can create temporary measures until permanent measures are decided.
Yeah. Right. So their mandate is going to be under the umbrella of workplace safety. So, you know, that's where they'll go with this. It's emergency measures. So that's why it's kind of this like end around of like why I'm not exactly a dictator is because I can go with OSHA and it's under the. But look, if you look at it like this, like whether they're allowed to do it or not, I mean, look, how much of what the federal government does right now are they allowed to do? The way we got to this place is because there's always another level. And all there's no question, this is what libertarians should understand. The question isn't whether they're allowed to do this or not. The question isn't what is on this piece of paper that was written in the 1780s. The question is, will judges overthrow this or not? That's all that matters. And who knows? It's a very hard, you know, thing to say. Will, if this were to make it all the way up to the Supreme Court, will the Trump appointed justices hold their line on this? I wouldn't bet on it. They cave more often than not. That's not. Look, there was real brilliance to this proposal, and I don't know if I would give that credit to Biden or to probably people around him. My guess is people around him. My guess is that he used up all the juice he had on ending the war in Afghanistan and now had to give in on this. And also it serves as a perfect distraction from his rush. Shut up, dog.
And yeah, it also... sorry about that. That's my goddamn Corby.
No, it's okay. I love dogs. I think I'm going to have to get one soon. My daughter just really loves dogs and I can't fight it. Anyway, this, so what's brilliant about this, right, is that he is in the, he's now saying, right, it's not like he came out and said, I'm mandating vaccines for all these private companies. He said, no, 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 big companies, okay? Big companies, which are much more malleable by government, you know what I mean, like regulation, and are more likely to benefit, be net benefit, benefactors of government. And he also goes, you can still just take a test once a week. So we'll still allow you to not get the vaccination, but just make it a crazy inconvenience to you. So there's some real kind of like there's real wise strategy in the way that they did this. But there's also an opening in how, you know, how far can you push these things? How much will this galvanize the opposition? And that's our opening.
What do you think, Clint?
You know, I viewed it a few days ago as basically a declaration of war when he said this was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I thought those five words alone, I mean, it is so dehumanizing in its very nature. It is so separatist. I mean, really, like you are dividing this country. If you're supposed to be the president of everybody, which he ran on, by the way,
yeah, makes unity.
Which makes me fucking furious now.
Yeah.
I mean, it made me furious then because I knew it was bullshit. But now it makes me really, really angry because this is transparent what he's doing. He is dividing the country. And what kills me about it is I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not even opposed to vaccines. I'm a bodily autonomy, medical privacy person. I don't even give a shit if you want this thing. But you cannot fucking force it down our throats. And you cannot divide us as a nation, as a people, off of this ascientific garbage. And I'm almost speechless, honestly. Like I and Reed and I talked about this morning. I couldn't sleep last night. This is the first time in my life a political decision was so daunting, like the sword of Damocles hung over me, because I knew that whatever they were going to do was going to be a dividing line that could be put us on the precipice of a civil war. And the last thing I want is that. I want peace with these fucking monsters. But they're gonna label me as all sorts of things that I'm not, and force my hand basically to defend myself. And it's just pure evil. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm gonna make a rule. Okay. Here's the Dave Smith rule, right? Because as you say that, I'm just thinking about this. Every president will end up being the exact opposite of what their central campaign promise was. Yeah. All right. So George W. Bush ran as the small government candidate. Okay. Barack Obama ran as the transparency candidate, had the most secretive government ever. Donald Trump ran as the drain the swamp candidate, has John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and just the worst of the worst, swampiest creatures in there. And Joe Biden ran as the unity candidate, and he will end up being the most divisive. I mean, this speech today alone will divide the country more than anything that Donald Trump ever did in his entire 4 years, as divisive as Donald Trump was. But so as I was just saying, I've quoted this a few times recently, right? But for whatever reason, this is on my mind. You remember that movie Enemy of the State, which, by the way, I haven't watched in at least 20 years, but I just, for whatever reason, is on my mind. But so Enemy of the State is this movie, Will Smith, you know, unwittingly becomes an enemy. But the movie was like anti-NSA and shit, like way before anyone gave a shit about any of that stuff. And
it was great.
Then, yeah, great movie. And then Gene Hackman is like this ex-spy who's in trouble, who like coaches him. And there's this great scene. I messed this up before. I said it was on the rooftop, but it wasn't on the rooftop. They're sitting down at some restaurant, and Will Smith is like, look, I'm going to fight this. I'm not going down. And so, and Obama's the peace candidate. Perfect point. So my rule holds. So far, my rule holds. My law. Dave Smith law. It's the first law I've passed.
He's already making laws. He's not being president.
Yeah, I'm adding laws. I haven't even repealed a law yet, and I'm adding laws. But Gene Hackman says to Will Smith, he was like, okay, well, you got to fight guerrilla warfare style. Okay, so you got to flip whatever advantage they have into a disadvantage. And if they're big and you're small, then that means you're mobile and they're stagnant. and it, and you, they're visible and you're in the shadows, and you're, and it goes through this whole thing how you have to flip everything. So what we have to look at this as is like, what is the there's always a silver lining, even when things are like really bad. And with this, what the silver lining is that now they've, you know, they've kind of, shut up, Fat Dave, you're not even fat. But now they've kind of like, they've really played another major card in their hand. Yeah. And you got to think that, look, man, there are, I don't know, what's the vaccination rate right now in the country? It's 60%?
I think it's 76.
70. Yeah, 70%, but that's single dose. It's like 53% double dose.
Exactly. Okay. So even like some of those have like not, didn't go back for the second one, right? So you got to think after the largest propaganda campaign in human history, I mean, the largest propaganda campaign in human history is that this is the worst pandemic ever, and this is the best cure ever. And they still, we got this 35, 40% number that doesn't buy into it. And now they just really tried to push that down their throat. Maybe that buys them 5, 10% around the edges or something. But there's still this core group that's a pretty large chunk of the American people who are going to resist this. And that's our opening now. Mm-hmm. That they've, you know what I mean? Like they've disenfranchised. And there's openings there that we have to look for and we have to figure out how to exploit. A lot of it is that it's really disproportionately Black people and immigrants and a whole lot of that. So there's just a lot there, but I agree with Clint. I mean, this was a declaration of war for the guy who ran on the unity, promise.
Yeah, I think, I'm a bit of a maniac and a bit of an accelerationist, and I have unpopular opinions on this type of thing, but I was ecstatic when I heard how aggressive he was being and how blatant he was being. And like you said, Dave, he did cloak a little bit of it. Like, you don't have to get it and it's the big companies. But all in all, I don't think it really matters. I think people are shocked at what he said during his speech. Like he said, this isn't about freedom. This isn't about personal choice. This is about, doing the
right. It never is.
Yeah. No. And then they were mentioning another line that he said, which was like, I don't care if the governors won't do their job to keep this country safe. I'm going to kick them out of the way and do it myself or something like that. And
so that's a really interesting point too, right? That was another point of the speech that I thought was one of the most interesting, because he's clearly, and there are other, there's Abbott and Kristi Noem and them, but he was talking about DeSantis. I mean, no question about it, right? And so you have Ron DeSantis, who in his greatest test ever, and I give him shit sometimes, I shit on him the other day on Twitter for that dumb back the blue comment and all that, and that's fine. I think he should get shit when he's bad, and that's fine. But the reality of the situation is that in his greatest test, in the greatest test of his life, he passed with flying colors. Not perfect, he didn't get an A+, but he got an A for sure. And he had like a couple week lockdown, and then so he's been great on all of that. Now, whether that's because he really has some great, pure heart, or because he saw a political opening or whatever, that who the hell knows? But he passed. He gave his people in Florida more freedom than almost any governor, with the exception of Kristi Noem, than any governor in the country. And that's something, if we actually care about real liberty in real people's lives, we have to give him respect for that. And I've said, absolutely, and this doesn't do me any favors, but I've said that the LP should not challenge him if he runs for governor again. Florida. We should not challenge any of the free state governors. And that's only the three of them. And even Abbott, I'm stretching. But Noem and DeSantis, for sure, we should not challenge, because we got to be like, no, we're really here for liberty. We're not here to ruin the best, Republican governors to hand it to the Democrats and have people masked up and locked down or any of that shit. But what I took from that comment from Joe Biden was, here's round two of the biggest moment of DeSantis's life. And he passed the first one. I don't know. Hopefully he passes this next one. But this is a next one. Now does he cave to this? Or does he stand up? Because this is a little bit different. Now the federal government has basically said, Clint, you said they're at war with the America. They're at war with DeSantis. They're going, we'll pay those teachers' salaries that you're claiming you'll hold back. They're going to mm-hmm. undermine everything he does. Now, if he, I'm 60% optimistic, 40% pessimistic on this. And the only reason I go 60-40, it's not because I trust DeSantis at all, but I think at this point, all of his political incentives line up for him to fight this thing. Because if he doesn't fight this thing, then what's he? You know, he's lost his whole mojo, you know? So, but this is a really big test for DeSantis now, and to see how they try to enforce this and whether he'll show that same level of courage in fighting against this. And
go ahead, Glenn.
I just wanted to say, I want to spin one more white pill out of this, is that all of the bullshit debates that we've been having amongst the LP when it comes to private businesses, bro, and they can do whatever they want, that kind of gets thrown out the window today. And I think that is good, because it galvanizes us at least. And it brings us together with the conservatives that oppose this in being able to see through it, to see the fascism that it truly is, that they are forcing this down big business's throat. And you can make all sorts of little excuses. Oh, it's not small business, so there's still options for employment, as if that's like not totally egregious. So that gives me some optimism. I think that, you know, DeSantis, this is definitely a test of the number one political competitor that they see in the field. Then they're trying to either push him to a point that they like, this is where I see it going. I see them sending in OSHA people, whatever the fuck their names are, I don't know. And then they go in there to levy fines, because I think that's the only enforcement that they have. Yeah. But maybe they can arrest people. I don't know.
They
We're gonna find out.
SWAT team. Who the hell?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, who knows?
This is a great excuse for governors to kick OSHA out of their states. I would love to see that. I'll move to whatever state that is.
This is where I'm going with it, is that this is going to be the test. Will DeSantis tell his local PD to arresting agents if they have that capacity in his state? I mean, these are the groundwork for civil war, secession, all sorts of craziness potentially.
Yeah.
So we're going to test a lot of people's resolve in the coming months.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, I think that the political viability of being against Biden and being against lockdowns is a lot more fertile now than it was when Kristi Noem was the only governor and then Ron DeSantis was the second. Like back then, it was like if you were against lockdowns, you were crazy. But now it's like half the country is against lockdowns. Even like some of the left wingers don't like it. And, you know, Biden's gone way down in popularity, especially with all the Afghanistan stuff. I think it's for mostly the wrong reasons, but either way, he's plummeted in the polls. Everybody hates Kamala Harris. So I think opposing Biden is a much more popular stance now than it used to be.
And I got to say, and Scott Horton made this point when he was on Kennedy a few weeks ago, but I've been talking to Scott a lot about this lately. Just, you know, not on podcast, just fucking on the phone, getting yelled at for saying the wrong thing. But we all
know what it's like now. We witnessed it in person.
You know, he'll let you know. But I really do think he's got this completely right, that this is all a big smoke and mirrors thing, that the idea that they're trying to push that Biden's popularity has been decreasing because of Afghanistan. I just don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I don't think that people are really so upset that the ending of the war wasn't as smooth as they thought it could be, or even that there's Americans left behind, or that the Taliban runs Kabul now. Like, who the fuck cares in America really about any of that shit? I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some right wingers who hate losing in disgrace, and I get that. But
it didn't flip anybody.
Yeah,
I know mostly right wingers, and they're all fucking pissed. So I don't know. Maybe I just don't know.
Look,
enough
I know that people are pissed.
They were never
about
voting
that.
For Biden anyway.
They weren't Biden supporters. Right. The reason why Biden's approvals are going down is because of a few factors. Number one, the inflation that nobody can hide anymore. The fact that the price of everything is out of control, which, man, I don't know where this came from. I can't believe we printed trillions of dollars and then all of a sudden the price of everything went up. Right. You know, like obviously we're almost... It's really insane to think that libertarians are the only ones who like really get that, like, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. But yes, the monetary inflation leads to the price inflation. Shocker. And also just that I think for most normies, the center of the Joe Biden campaign was that, look, this COVID thing is a fucking nightmare. And the handling of it was terrible. And that was really easy. You got to understand, as the I'm sure the four of us know, even though we're into like politics and philosophy and all this shit, that most people aren't. And right. that most people just go like, I don't know, they follow one or two. Maybe they watch a half hour of CNN a day at best, or read the New York Times once a week. But, you know, mm-hmm. they catch the Sunday, at the, you know, edition of the New York Times or something. And they go, yeah, I don't know. There's this big there's this virus going around, and the president's up there saying inject bleach in your arms. And that seems pretty ridiculous. And well, they really didn't seem to handle this that good. And Biden's pitch was like, the adults are back in the room. And of course, when COVID, when the numbers were falling way low, his popularity was pretty high. And then the Delta variant came in, and now it's right back out of control again. And we're right back in masks and right back to the vaccine passports and all this shit. And it's like, oh, so he didn't do any of that. So to me, that's much more plausible as the reason mm-hmm. why Joe Biden's popularity is crashing than any of this stuff. So just putting that out there, I think that's much more likely what's really going on here.
Yeah. So this is a, you know, the three of us, you, me, and Jeremy, we first got together like 6 months ago to talk about trying to unite the Liberty movement. And 6 months ago, we were kind of in disarray. We had just really not done well in the election or any election throughout the country. And we were all fighting, and everyone was kind of aimless and couldn't really figure out what it was we were supposed to be doing. I think now it's a lot easier to be like, hey, guys, it's pretty obvious now what can unite us, because, you know, we had just kind of been failing for months on end. But now there's like blatant executive orders coming out. And there's an obvious agenda that's being pushed that if you talked about a year ago, you might have sounded kind of crazy. If you'd said, hey, there might be countries making camps and putting unvaccinated and infected people into them. And, you know, they're going to create this caste system that alienates everyone who doesn't get the vaccine. You would have still been called a conspiracy theorist. But now it's happening in Australia, and it's starting to happen here. So this yeah. should be a pretty unifying central point to come around now, I would say.
Well, it's funny. It's yeah, that, nope. that third world country of Australia that is literally has police beating people in the streets for the crime of leaving their home. I mean, this is no joke, man. To see something like that is really something. And, you know, I was watching earlier today. I watched part of that, the last one that we did, which I can't believe is 6 months ago already, but that's, yeah. And I will say that that was one of the major points that I was trying to hit home when we were talking, was like, dude, like this is totalitarianism, and we all should be together, you know, opposing this. And if we can't do that, yes. then what are we doing? And the Liberty Unity Project and whatever, you know, our version of that was an interesting one. And people have, I think, you know, are in different places since then. And certainly, like, you know, I think it's funny to look back at that and that, like, you know, read, like, you know, you were there and you were like, dude, you're getting a lot of these Twitter fights. Like, I don't know. What's the deal with that? And now, but, and part of this, and I don't mean this in like, look, I never said anything that I don't believe at all. But I also think that I kind of expected that some of this might happen. You know, I think that people would realize yeah. kind of like who's who, and you know, once we did this unity thing, you would see that it's like, you know, once you, I think it's almost like this thing that, like, once you just had like a conversation with me, because I always know that if I have a conversation with anybody and they're like a reasonable, you know, person, it's like, okay, great. Well, I'll go have a conversation with them, because this'll be good. Like I yeah. have good points here, and they'll understand where I'm coming from. And then as soon as you do that, you start getting these vicious attacks, and then you realize it's like, oh no, it's not just like two people are fighting here. It's like this is some really wild attacks that you get just yeah. for having a conversation with someone saying reasonable shit. But to me, I think it couldn't have been more of a success. And yeah. I think that, you know, it showed everybody who's who. And mm-hmm. that, you know, you realize kind of like what, oh, okay, who actually cares about the issues that matter? who yep. just wants to fight about nonsense, who wants to level like outrageous accusations at other people that like should get you punched in the fucking mouth for ever saying to someone on no basis. Yeah. And you know, and I'll say this again, something that probably doesn't do me any favors to say, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. I've said this many times. I don't care about the Libertarian Party. Right. I care about liberty. And if the Libertarian Party is an effective vehicle toward liberty, then great. And if not, it can burn to the ground. In the same way that, like, if you're, you know, on a bike trying to escape certain death, and then there's, you don't just have loyalty to the bike, you're right. trying to escape death, you know? And if there's a motorcycle next to you, you'll dump that bike for the motorcycle. And if not, but I believe that the Libertarian Party is the best vehicle right now. And that's why I'm a part of the Libertarian Party. But what's much more important than that to me is the liberty movement and actual liberty. And mm-hmm. if you want to look at it that way in terms of liberty unity, I mean, what we got after all of that stuff, especially after the New Hampshire thing all went down, is you basically got, you know, Justin Amash, Spike Cohen, myself, all being against the corruption in the Libertarian Party. By the way, Justin Amash has been in the most Justin Amash way great on all of this yeah. stuff like today. Yeah. And I don't mean that as an insult at all. I just mean like yeah, Justin Amash.
That's yeah. his lane. That's his audience. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. And that's what he should do. Like yes. Justin and me say have like, you know, very different, I don't know, backgrounds and experiences. And I'm like a filthy comedian and he's like a congressman. And so he's going to say it in the way he says it. And I'm going to say it in the way I say it. And he reaches some people that I can't and I reach some people that he can't. But he was great on this speech of Biden's today. Spike Cohen was great on this today, right away. It's just perfect, perfect messaging. So all of us are together. I mean, all four of us, you know, who do we have? Like Ron Paul, Tom Woods, you know, Eric July, Maj Touré, like all the big figures in the movement. Pete Quinones has been great on this. Like everybody, like all of the people yep. with followings have been, we're all together on this, that we're opposed to this thing. So if you actually look at like the liberty unity idea, as I, you know, as we all knew from the very beginning, yeah, there's this group of people who we all probably pay too much attention to, who, yeah, they're not help. They don't do anything or whatever. But aside from that, yeah, the rest of us, I think, have unified as much as possible. I think this is, I think it's worked out great.
Let me make yeah. a note, an additional note to that. I haven't thought about the Loser Brigade all week. Because real shit is happening, you know, like yeah. if you can't unify when real tyranny is upon us, like then you're not even in this for liberty. Like at that point, I don't even fucking relate to you. You aren't my people. You don't see what I see. You don't understand what I'm fighting for. And I don't need you at all. So you are out of my purview. Anybody that is been soft about mandates, I have dismissed out of hand. Yeah. And today, This is the best moment, in my opinion. This is the best moment since the lockdown started, which everyone was scared and you couldn't get people to galvanize because they didn't know what we were dealing with and blah, blah, blah. We know what we're dealing with now and we know what their intentions are with us. We're 18 months deep into this shit. If you can't come together in this moment, then you're not in this fight. You're not coming along for the ride. You're nothing to me. I'm just being straight yeah. up. Like that's no, how I
think,
I feel.
I think you're right. And I also think that and probably like it doesn't even make any sense to focus on, you know, whatever we call the Loser Brigade or people like that. Just whatever. Who cares? Like yeah. their arguments have been defeated a million times over. They have nothing to offer. It's funny. The guys, they don't even want to debate anymore. Like I've been through all of that. They know what'll happen. Like
they won't even debate me.
Dude. Yeah, because they know. Yeah. They know. It's like this is not. They're not even interested in that. They're just interested in like making sarcastic comments online or something. I don't know. Really lame jokes. Anyway, but more importantly than that is the kind of like look. There are these people in these old institutions and in positions of, you know, power. within the LNC and stuff like that, who are like, you know, very soft, you know, people at the Cato Institute who are writing articles about how it, you know, vaccine mandates, I guess, are better than the other options and therefore right. libertarian and stuff. So those people have shown their ass. But the thing that's encouraging, this is what to me real liberty unity looks like, because what is unity? I mean, I hate, in a way, it's like one of these lame words that people, you know, use in politics. But it's like, look, getting together as many of us as we can on the same page. And so that doesn't mean
I always had to point out to everyone that it was liberty unity, because, you know, we would be calling someone out for a shit take like Cato or something when this thing first got going. And everyone would be like, I thought you were all about unity. And it's no. It's about liberty. Like,
yeah, well, right. Around right. So we're not. Obviously, we're not going to have 100% of people who identify as libertarians on the same page, but we want as many as we can who are focused on the big issues. And here's the thing that's a real white pill for me, is what happens when one of those Cato guys or the Reason magazine guys, you know, support the COVID regime?
Everybody, I mean, okay. Appreciated
to help. Yeah, I mean, you know, okay, I understand that, like, people say, well, Twitter isn't real life and all of this. And it's like, yes and no. It kind of is.
It's the microcosm.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, it's a sample of real life. And yeah, like, if you go, you know, it's like if you had, like, if you were doing market research for a product and you tested it in one market and you're like, 100% of people hate it. You can't go, that market isn't real life. It's like, no, right. that's poor evidence that your product is desired in the market. And anytime you see one of these people, they're just like overwhelmingly ratioed, just getting destroyed on social media. And so the overwhelming majority of the movement is completely opposed to the COVID regime. And so I think you have no future in the liberty movement unless you're opposed to the COVID regime. And to me, that's great. And it's really great that Justin Amash and Spike Cohen have come out so hard against it and been so good on this issue that it's like, oh, okay, great. So now we can all move forward in agreement about the most important thing, and then go from there, and then say, okay, like, who's, what path now is best to take after we all agree on the basics, and those other people can literally just be forgotten.
Yeah, you can have like, there's fair disagreements about immigration and abortion. There's all sorts of things that I feel like really good libertarians can take both sides of the debate on.
This ain't it.
COVID regime ain't it, brother. No, like that's the one.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Jose Gallison, because he recommended that we block some of these people, and
yeah,
we did that, and we haven't seen any of their shit for like a couple months now. That was a great idea. But I did want to say, since we're doing this video 6 months later and it's the same style, that I was wrong about a lot of things 6 months ago that I've realized, and I think it's just good for other people to hear it too. But, you know, I kind of thought this was two antagonistic sides just going at each other, and I have out-Nazi'd Dave now. Like, I get called a Nazi more than Dave. Thank you, Ryan Dawson.
I don't know. I get it a lot. But
yeah. But I mean, there's like the Fakertarians. I know people who see the page and they say, like, there's just pages and pages about how I'm an anti-Semite now. So like, I am kind of in your shoes now, where 6 months ago I didn't know any of these people. I just saw a bunch of people fighting each other and hating each other. There are parasites in this movement that just do nothing but try to eat you up for doing something productive.
And I can't believe you're going to call them parasites, Reed.
Thanks.
No. You get a Jew pass on this.
Yeah.
You're right. Parasites. That's the correct term. I don't know what to say. Listen, I'm not even interested anymore. Like, I've had these arguments. I don't know. I mean, if find your ultimate boss to come fucking debate me if you want to. Like, let me know who it is. But all of them, like, that is the correct term. And like, Jews are not parasites,
right?
But you are.
Like, that's energy that you don't give to them, right? Like,
but it's just at this point you're like, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do to help? And if your answer is, I root out bigots, like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. What do you do? What do you actually do for anything? And all four of us could answer that question. And if you can't, then get the fuck out of here. I don't care. This is real shit. And things are actually at a point now where this is important. So that's it.
On their resume, all it says is speed bump to Dave Smith. And then at the bottom, it says, not even good at that.
Like, yeah, that's
their entire fucking resume.
County treasurer of the LP.
Well, but you're right. And I kind of knew that. And I remember when we did that video 6 months ago now, or the podcast, that, you know, I remember all three of you guys, one of whom who is not here, who fell to the dark side. But we did this whole thing, and a lot of you guys were kind of had this attitude, like, you know, it's like, but you're always fighting with these guys and all of that. And I meant every word that I said on that show, but I also kind of knew that, like, you know, see it once you get into this a little bit more, see it from my perspective, that it's like, it's not like you can just call some type of neutrality between one side who's like calling you a Nazi and the other side who's like, fuck you for calling me a Nazi. That's not like let's split it down the middle here. It's like, no, the only like adult answer there is to be like, what the fuck are you doing? And you see these tactics used over and over again. Whatever, I'd rather talk about like real issues than any of this shit. But you see these tactics over and over again where they'll be like, as I've pointed out before, they don't believe any of the shit they're saying. They'll go, hey, the Libertarian Party of Kentucky compared vaccine passports to the yellow stars, and that's anti-Semitic because you can't just compare things to Nazis.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, dude, you're the same motherfucker, the same person who will call everybody else Nazis. Right. I mean, come on. What do you even say to that person? Like, you're just you're a bad person.
Yeah, I feel like you and I kind of passed each other. Like, you were, like, definitely, like, arguing with all the time. And I was like, Dave, stop. And then you stopped doing it. And then I started doing it. And I'm, like, closer to where you were. And you're, like, closer to where I was when we did that video 6 months ago. It's kind of funny.
Well, I do think that, like, you know, as Clint was kind of getting at before, that we, you know, it's all of this stuff. We, you know, but particularly after today. But in general, this has been true for a while, that it's like, you know, this is some very important things that we're dealing with. And I think no matter what's happening here exactly, none of us know for sure, but this is a very big moment. And I think it's really important that we get focused on what actually matters.
This is not like 1995 Libertarian Party meetup where like you still have prosperity and general or relative freedom. This is like deep down the path to dystopia. So if even in this moment you still can't see the danger, then I don't even know. I don't even know like who you are. I don't know where you live. Like, as someone who's been in a blue state for most of this, thank God I traveled out of the country and got to feel sane for a little while. Or not out of the country, but out of the fucking state of California for a couple months.
Ooh, but isn't that an interesting Freudian slip?
Yeah.
It was kind of a different country, right?
Oh, it felt like
in a way, you know, if you ever read Rothbard, it's a really interesting article called Nations by Consent, which was late Rothbard, which is the controversial Rothbard. But bad it kind of talks about the difference between the nation and the nation state. Mm-hmm. And that we kind of conflate the two in modern times, and that, you know, you realize like what is really making us one nation right now? Well, nothing other than the state.
Right.
That's it. Like, is you know, Orlando and Brooklyn really one nation? No. I mean, that's been one of the wildest things for me too, is traveling around during this time. Well, you know, during the whole COVID thing. Where I'll go do a show in, you know, Manhattan, and then go do a show in Austin, Texas, and then go do a show, you know, and you're
South
like,
Dakota.
Wow, it's South Dakota. And you just go to one place and you're like, oh, this is, you know, I'm in 2019. And then you go to somewhere else and you're like, I'm in dystopian COVID land. And you're like, right. Oh, wow, they just choose to be this way. And especially when you see, you know, the whole culture war thing where they hate each other's guts so much. It's like you're living two different lifestyles. You hate each other's guts. Why are we together? And the only reason we're together is because the federal government forces us to be. And that's a very powerful thing for a libertarian to acknowledge that, you know, this is a different, there's nothing, it's not like, oh, we have this common culture, these common bonds, that is in essence what a nation is. Is this a group of people? Well, we have the same language, the same cultures, the same traditions. We stick together. We don't have that.
Another white pill, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, but there are now a lot of left wingers talking about secession. A lot of progressives talking about we need this.
Yeah.
So everybody realizes what you just said, but a lot of people when they hear that, Dave, not to play devil's advocate because I completely disagree, but they will go, oh, well, that's just radical nationalism or racism or whatever. What does shared culture mean? I will tell you what shared culture means. As a white dude from the deep South who has family members that probably were involved with the KKK, who has definitely had Thanksgiving with racists before, I will tell you I have more in common with black Southerners than I do white people from Portland. Any given day of the week. And that's what culture is that in a place like the South, the deep South, especially, those two cultures are kind of one. And it has nothing to do with race or
it
has everything to do with values as a person.
And not just, you're absolutely right. And not just values, but just kind of like, look, a nation is about things that bind you no matter what they are. And you know, there might be, you know, you could be like, whatever, you could be in an airport somewhere and sit down at the airport bar and there's a black dude next to you in a Raiders jersey and you're a Packers fan or whatever, you know, and you go, you guys got off to a rough start this year. And they go, yeah, but we're going to come back. We're looking good at that. And you have something to talk about. You know, you have something that kind of binds you together. Hey, we're both football fans, even if you root for different teams. You know, like, it's, hey, we're both kind of, we know the same thing. Now, that's different than if you sat down next to some Nigerian at the bar who's like, you're like, I don't know what we're going to talk about. Like, like, it just got here today. Like, and that's not anything to do with race. They were both the same race. It's just that one person is in the same culture that you are and one isn't. And it's not to say that you should hate the person who's not in your culture or anything like that. It's just like, how do things work? What keeps us together?
Maybe we shouldn't be making decisions for one another.
Well, that's one thing. But also to your point that, like, you know, I'm, you know, specifically talking about black people. God damn. Thank God we have black people in this country. Yeah. I mean, has anyone been better about actually resisting the vaccine mandates than the black community in this country? You know, if I were to sit down with
something to do with the Tuskegee project, you know.
Maybe. Well, yes.
By the way, black people lived and are worked.
Rightfully skeptical about this stuff.
I lived and worked 20 minutes from Tuskegee, had several employees that worked for me that are from Tuskegee, had grandparents in the study. Some wild shit. And you better, they're like, no, fuck that.
For all the accusations from these dumbass woke fucking, you know, supposed libertarians, which I don't even know what to fucking call them anymore. And I don't care about arguing over that word, but whatever the fuck they are is not what I am. Yeah, no, dude, I would, if I'm sitting down with just some random, like, black dude at a, you know, a bar or wherever, I bet I got more that I could talk to him about than some Ivy League white dude. I bet, you know, 100%. I bet we could right away start talking about the state of the world today and how crazy it is, and me and him would become friends way quicker than they would. So it's not, it has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with, like, it has a lot to do with class, actually. I'll say that, but that's it. It's like, no, what you have to have something that you know keeps you together, and that is what this country is experiencing right now. Is that there's really no unifying culture. There, I mean, there are several unifying cultures, but they're in stark opposition to each other.
And to your point, when were the worst riots? When they shut down all sports summer 2020, because that was the one time people didn't have that thing to bind them. They didn't have something to root for that was external, that they could externalize their frustration and their anger. And you saw streets burned en masse because of it. I really think that you're onto something with that. And to your point about whether or not we're fucking white supremacists or any nonsense like that, I would rather have Dave Smith and Spike Cohen and Maj Touré and Eric July at my dinner table than, you know, Nick Sarwak and his entire ilk. So it's like, this is not about race. This is about just like, this is what actually binds us. And the priority here, in my opinion, this is the dividing line that binds us on my side of the fence, is freedom over safety. And I think that's the real division in this country. I mean, there's obviously many subsects and a lot of different, smaller categories that you could break that into, but those are the two big ones. Like, do you prioritize liberty or safety? The safety people are running the country right now, even though it doesn't make us safe. And the people that value liberty are now, we're in our own camp. And I will cross other lines politically to meet with people that see this the same way.
Well, maybe I would have like a slight disagreement with that. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot for the last, you know, few months. I guess maybe like 6 months or something like that. And when I was on Zuby, I was on his show, and this was something I said to him, and then I really thought about it for a while after that, where it was, the conversation was, he brought up the H.L. Mencken quote about most men preferring safety to liberty. And, you know, as I thought about it, I was like, you know, I guess I do prefer safety to liberty. Not necessarily for myself, but certainly for my family. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly if I, safety for my wife and children is definitely more important to me than liberty for myself. Like, I would be a slave to keep them safe if that's what it came to.
And here's an interesting question. Well, Dave, can I ask you this?
Let me just, yes, I'm happy to answer, but just to say, it's not even in a weird way that the contradiction is between safety and liberty. What you're talking about with the COVID maniacs versus us, I want safety from them. Right. And I think that liberty is the answer to have safety from them. I think in a way, liberty gives us the answer to have safety from the COVID regime. Like, I would, just to make this clear, and Jeremy, I want to hear what you had to say, but to make this clear, if someone were to say, hey, look, you can't ever leave the state you're in, but you're going to be okay and your family will be okay, I would absolutely take that deal. I would sacrifice some liberty for safety. My big concern with these tyrants is that they threaten the safety of all of us. It's not even like the COVID, you know, activists are keeping us safe. It's that this is insane. Mm-hmm. That this is fucking insane, that COVID is not that big of a threat. Let's get real. It's not an issue of safety versus liberty. It's an issue of tyranny versus liberty, and the tyranny is way more of a threat to our safety than anything that we're advocating, you know? So anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
I just meant by their perception, but
you're right that is what they're advocating versus what we're advocating, but
right.
Anyway.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, my question was this, because you're I'm a new father. You're soon to be a father for the second time. You mentioned your family. The other day I had an odd thought, and for the first time with the Delta variant, and you're starting to see it impact more kids. But I had the thought of like, what if I died and my kid never got to know me? We had to say goodbye over Zoom. What if this? I'm a big dude. What if this thing actually kicked my ass? And for the first time, I considered the vaccine. Have you dealt with those? Have you wrestled with that yourself personally, having a family?
Well, you know, I think that I am not convinced that the vaccine would do much to protect my family. Mm-hmm. And if I was, I mean, I would take whatever risk onto myself to protect them. But I'm just not, you know, I have not been convinced by that. I think that there, you know, if I'm talking about my family, they're in the, I don't know, 99.99% chance of being fine from all of this. Right. And that to me is not, I'm just not there yet where I've seen enough evidence that this is really something that's going to protect them. And what are we even talking about? I mean, look, in take Israel, for example, which I think is a very illuminating, case study in all of this, Israel, we all love them. So Reed, your favorite country. But by the way, I really actually do. I will tell you, I actually really do love the country of Israel. I think that the government is very fucked up, but I also really love the nation of America, and I think the government's really fucked up. And I don't think that, you know, is right. a reflection on the people necessarily. They were one of the most vaccinated, if not the most vaccinated, countries in the world. They had something like an 80% vaccination rate. The Delta variant but the Delta variant tore through the country and it was a big thing. Of the people hospitalized, the latest data from the official data from the government, and this isn't like some, you know, study, they're just counting who's in the hospital. The hospitalization rate, 60% were vaccinated. I don't see enough evidence right now to really say yes, to protect others, you should get vaccinated for this. So it's not as if, like, you know, yeah, it's scary, dude, but at the same time, you know, there's like a million things that are kind of scary, that something could happen to you and your family could be messed up. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving anyone else medical advice. But for me personally, it's like, nah, I don't know. I feel like I've gotten through this whole thing so far.
Yeah. The reason it came to mind is you said I would give up a little bit of my liberty to make sure my family was safe.
Yeah, if I thought it was keeping them safe, I would chop off an arm if I thought it was keeping them safe.
Keywords are
I got to be convinced. I got to be convinced it's making them safe.
Well, I just think that could be an interesting dichotomy between the two other gentlemen here who, you know, kind of are like, hell no, under no circumstances, you know.
Clint safer, I'd get the vaccine.
You know? I feel the same way about you, Reed.
Yeah, Dave.
But I want to have kids with you, so like I'm gonna avoid it too. So
yeah, we're still trying. It hasn't worked out, but nothing's gonna stop us. Yeah. So Dave, something that really struck me about you when I first actually started listening to you a lot and having you on the show and talking to you is you really had this message that political power is what shapes culture. It's almost the opposite of this phrase that we're used to of politics is downstream from culture. It's almost the other way around. Like you see all this anger and hatred and all this fighting when there's political power exerted over people who disagree with you. Like the reason the vaccine is such a hot topic is because they're going to mandate it and people are demanding that you get it. If it was just up to you and people are like, yeah, sure, if you want to go, you know, then it wouldn't be this huge mess that it is. But I think that's very, very true.
Yeah, I there's something that frustrates me a lot when people just say, well, politics is downstream from culture. And, you know, it's like this Andrew Breitbart quote, and then everyone just takes it and they go, yep, got it. And it's not that it's completely wrong. I mean, there are certainly examples where, like, if the culture changes enough, then yeah, what are the politicians going to do? But it's more of a feedback loop than anything else. It's not that one is downstream from the other. But, you know, if you just think about, like, I don't know, think about, like, you know, your experience going to a supermarket or going to a bar or going out and how you relate to other people versus how once politics comes into the mix, how you relate with other people. It's like, what are we going to pretend politics isn't affecting culture as well? I mean, like, look at North Korea and South Korea. Are you really going to tell me that, like, the government isn't having some influence on the culture of those two land masses that would probably be exactly the same? Are you going to tell me it's genetics? Because they're exactly the same, identical genetically. Right. But yet they have these completely different societies, you know? So I mean, I do think there is certainly a lot of influence from you know, culture onto politics, but there's also a lot of influence from politics onto culture.
And I've got an example that demolishes it. You can't even argue it. The Federal Reserve. I mean, You have the Federal Reserve come in, they start to inflate the currency, you end up with dual income households where both parents have to work. That absolutely changes the culture of this country.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent example. Phenomenal example. And just and there's like a bunch more you could do with the Federal Reserve. Just like, how about the kind of like culture, you know, which they'll blame on capitalism or libertarianism or whatever, but of consumerism, where you have these like artificially low interest rates and you have this kind of whole Wall Street casino, you know, like Gordon Geico world. Why, you know, that didn't just come out of nowhere. It's not like people just decided, I want private jets and yachts and all this stuff. It's like, no, you created a system where people can make like extravagant amounts of money off doing nothing but speculating. And this has profound effects on the culture. So I think that it's not that there isn't anything to culture. And in fact, what I'm trying to do is affect culture to affect politics in a way. Yep. Like, I'm not against that, but let's just understand the situation that we're in. And of course, it's there's huge impacts from both, because really what libertarians should understand is that we're all people. There's no, the collective is all kind of always an illusion, right? Yeah. Like, there is no forest, there's just trees, and there is no government or us, right? We're all just people, and we all have influence on each other. But of course, the people who are in control of exerting force on the rest of us, what, they don't affect culture? They're not in this game too? Of course they are. So that's what's like frustrating about all of that.
Do you think the government didn't change our culture with lockdowns? Of course it did.
Right. I mean, exactly.
Devastatingly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dave, when I joined the Mises Caucus, just in case anyone didn't know that, but I joined it like 3 months ago after the New Hampshire kerfuffle happened. And I would encourage anyone else who's thinking about it to also do it. But when the Pragmatist Caucus dissolved and went away, I think that was actually bad, because, you know, libertarians don't seem to be able to punch up. They've always got to have some internal conflict. So with the Wokertarian loser brigade kind of falling to the wayside, suddenly like the hardcore libertarians are starting to have these fractures, and they're over really stupid shit that has nothing to do with government policy. It's like religion or cultural preferences. And yeah. I just hate to see it happen, and I'm always trying to punch up. I'm trying to bring things out of that circle. But how do we get them to stop doing this? Because it seems like the natural tendency is more and more breakup, not bringing pieces together. But how do you think we avoid that?
I think that you have to accept that some of that's always going to happen. You know, you can't control everybody, and I think it's easy to kind of We focus on those things. Just it's a natural human tendency, but we focus on the conflict. You know, like, where's the conflict now? I'm as guilty as anyone of this. But I, like I said before, what I look at is I try to zoom out and look at the bigger picture and say, wait a minute. Well, we've got, you know, if we have Ron Paul, the whole Mises Institute, Tom Woods, Bob Murphy, you know, the Mises Caucus, Michael Malice, me, you know, Eric July, Maj Ture, all three of you guys, all the more, you know, and Justin Amash and Spike Cohen and all of these guys all on the same side here.
It's great.
I don't really think that it's true. Yeah. And yes, there will be people here or there who break off and say, no, we want to do this our own way, or we want to do this. And, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, I talked about this after our show 6 months ago, when you know, in the aftermath of that, one of the things that I decided was that when I was like, you know, I think one of the things I'm fucking up in is I'm creating this perverse incentive structure where at first I really had this, I think kind of naive, but very genuine view where I was like, look, we're all libertarians, so we're all great, you know? And if anyone has a problem with me,
let's debate it.
But I was like, let's debate. And then I kind of, in some weird way, felt like, but if I just make better arguments, then you'll be like, ah, shit, that's right. You made better arguments. Because that's why you're a libertarian. You were persuaded by better arguments. And so, of course, you'll have to admit, like, yeah, okay, we. And then just time and time again, you know, I made way better arguments than those people are, like, still out calling me whatever names. And eventually you realize you're like, oh, okay, I'm actually incentivizing people to come try to call me horrible names, because then you'll get a little bit more attention and all of this. And so I kind of I tried to switch it and go, okay, well, let me incentivize all the people I really like. And let me incentivize the people I think are doing really good work, like you guys. You know what I mean? Like, let me try to, like, make it a thing where that'll be the benefit, that the people who, you know, are doing the right thing will get rewarded for that. But once something is taking off and making a huge impact, if you're not a real force within that, the incentives always kind of come to be opposed to it. So there'll always be some people who want to try to fill that lane. But I think that the truth is that there's little splinters here or there. But overall, I think that it really is like the vast majority of us are brought together and kind of focus on the same things.
I think the only mistake you made was that you were attributing your own character to your detractors. You were assuming that I could present a better argument and they would accept it because they're a libertarian like me. So obviously they can buy into that. Some people that classify themselves as libertarian are not that. They don't actually get persuaded by better arguments. So you know, you live and you learn. But your point about there being you know, an external enemy for us to galvanize against, I think that that's what's been so perplexing to me, because, like, you look at the Republican Party, they galvanize around you know, immigrants and hating them to some extent.
Yeah.
They also galvanize around hating taxes and the government to a lesser extent, and then Democrats obviously now galvanize
around the liberals. I mean, what they galvanize around the most is to the own liberals. The fucking left. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. That's a huge one. And then the liberals, they galvanize now around, you know, COVID and lockdowns, and then also hating white people, which is a shift that I didn't expect. And it's really fucking heartbreaking. So what the reason I thought that there would be no issue with unifying in the LP was we have an external enemy that is eternal. It is the state. Yeah. Like, it should be, it should be such a given that, like, all of our petty disagreements are fucking pointless because we are under the boot of a Goliath. And I think that we can now see Goliath's boot coming down very aggressively. And I hope that that'll continue to bring us together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been something, you know, to see that not only, because again, like I guess I said this on, maybe I don't remember. Maybe I said something along these lines on the last time that we did this this get together. Clint, of course, you weren't there, but the three of us, and where I said, like, and this is the truth, because I actually care about liberty. And if somebody who, you know, let's say somebody who disagreed with me, like, I'm not for open borders, is, you know, I think is pretty well known at this point, and I'm pro-life. But if somebody who was for open borders, which I've supported, I supported Jacob Hornberger for president, he's like way for open borders, and somebody who was pro-choice, you know, and they were, I don't know, talked to some left-wingers and were really friendly with them on podcasts who I really don't like. I don't know who the worst left winger, you know, they had the Young Turks on their podcast, or they had like someone, you know, like that or something. I wouldn't even care about this. But if someone like that, like, was getting on big platforms and talking about ending the wars and ending the Fed and ending the war on drugs and the police state and the COVID regime and, like, all this stuff, I'd be so thrilled. So thrilled with that. Like, I'd be like, oh, that's so awesome, man. When anytime anyone who's a libertarian gets on a big platform, when Clint, when you went on a Tim Pool's show, when, right. when Pete was on his show the other day, if when Justin Amash is on like ABC's, you know, Sunday show, or Spike goes on Kennedy or any of these shows, I'm telling you, I fucking like am cheering. Like, I'm like yeah. clapping my hands. Like, yes, yeah. there might be, who the fuck knows, man? You might have just sparked the mind that is our guy that we won't even know about for another 15 years, but you just hit that guy. Like, ooh, yes, this is it. Like, I really do care about this, but to see that not only that other people will disagree with me or any of you guys on this stuff, but also will just launch these, like, holy shit, like, fucking accusations yeah. against us. I just don't, you know, is that calling Reed a fucking Nazi sympathizer? Like, what? Because, like, what? Because, like, Ryan said some fucked up shit on one video that he shouldn't have said, and it was fucked up, but, like, what? You're like a yeah. Nazi? Now, like, it's so funny, and I really do think part of it is because I'm a Jew of German descent who's, you know, my family went through that shit, that it's just like, dude, that word has weight to me. And you guys yeah. just throw it around like you throw it around like it's interchangeable with anti-Semitic. And that is not the same thing. Like, anti-Semitism and Nazi are not they are not synonyms.
Yep.
I mean, there's a Venn diagram there. Like, I'm not, and Nazi falls 100% into the Venn diagram. Like, there's no Nazi outside of it. But anti-Semitism is something that existed, I mean, almost globally. Like, almost everywhere Jews have ever lived, there's been people who are hostile to Jews. But Nazi has this particular thing, you know? Like, you are... And there's something I resent so much about that. And this is something that I guess some people don't understand. But to me, and given my family background, I it just makes a lot of sense to me. But, like, someone saying... You know, I've never had anyone actually argue this or say it to me, but even someone saying, I don't think the Holocaust ever happened. Like, I don't know. I'd kind of laugh that off. And I mean, if they said it to me, I guess I'd argue with them, but it's almost like, all right, that's stupid. I mean, it did. It definitely happened. I could tell you the death camp that my great grandfather died at. I could tell you the death camp my great grandmother died at, like, my grandmother died at, like, whatever. But to just use Nazi, like, as a pejorative to someone who just said something you don't like, you're like, so you're just trying to use, like, you're not that person who's claiming this never happened. You know it happened, and you're going to use it to just score cheap political points against your rivals. I find that a whole different level of despicable, and especially against good people who you know are just kind of like, you know, just advocate liberty, but maybe talk to a person you don't like or something like that. Man, I just, oof.
It's so low.
I can't tell you in, like, how low regard I hold those people. I yeah. think they're like, they push me to the limits of my belief in the non-aggression principle. Like, I don't think someone should beat the shit out of them if they see them.
But I think about it a lot. You should
do that. Yeah. But if they did, I'd get it. Yeah. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, yeah. I'd get it, and I go, you shouldn't have done that. It shouldn't be legal for you to do that. But I do get it. In the same sense that, like, I believe in the non-aggression principle, but if you were walking down the street with your wife and some guy passed you and was like, hey, your wife's a dumb slut, and you beat the shit out of him, like, oh, okay. That probably shouldn't be legal, but I'd also kind of get it. Like, I wouldn't like, you know, hate that guy for it. I mean, just, like, take that and apply that language where it belongs. There's so much, like you said, with all the shit going on around us, like, just there's you know, you want to call someone a fascist. Yeah. Okay.
This is why I knew that your detractors were so low, because every time I got to see you on Rogan, on Kennedy, on Fox News, or wherever else, CNN, MSNBC, wherever, all the shit you've been on, every time you kill it. every time you're nailing the biggest points that we care about, and yet they can still find some fucking out of context clip from a podcast or some guest that you had to paint you as a devil. And it's like, dude, even if you hate what he said there, how could you not value all of the fucking good shit that he, like all of the people that are waking up because of what Dave is accomplishing.
And there are crazy. To be fair, there are people and like I had a few of them the other day where someone, you know, from the deranged circle was like, oh, you can't criticize Dave or then everyone will get. And there's a bunch of people like, no, I criticize Dave for this or that. And we're totally cool. Like, it's not a problem. I mean, like
friends.
Yeah, from literally. Yeah. Like Reed's criticized me. Jeremy's just don't do it like in a way that's like, I don't know. Like, you know, you could Karen Ann Harlos said before where she's like, hey, I don't think you I think Dave's wrong on immigration and I don't think he should have done the podcast with Nick Fuentes and I don't think he should have done this. But, you know, whatever. We disagree on that and we agree on this and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And I don't you know, and even whatever. I guess I'll address it since it's just coming up. But David, was the other guy who was on the show, I wouldn't care if he was like, I think Dave's got the immigration thing wrong. It's just like when he starts going like, Dave, you're a fucking idiot. Like, you don't fucking know what you're talking about. You're just like fucking owning yourself. And you just look like a dumbass. And then I go, hey, David, do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Like, do you know what my position is? Have you read any of the fucking work that let you? Because I'm taking the position of Ron Paul, Murray Rothbard, Lou Rockwell, Hans Hermann Hoppe, like a lot of really brilliant libertarians. Like, have you read any of that? Do you know? And then he'll be like, oh, you're just hiding behind books. And you're like, yeah, I
or the ideas books. Within them.
Yeah, yes, yes, books are involved in this, dude. Like, and so basically the answer is no. So you're just being a disrespectful, like you're a disrespectful kid who doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, what? How am I supposed to react to that? I just go, yeah. So okay, so fuck you. Like right. it's like. I don't know. Just be a decent human being about this. Like, have some respect. We can disagree. And by the way, everyone here on this show knows if he went, hey, dude, I don't really understand where you're coming from, I'd explain it to him. Like, I'd be happy to. There's no one who's ever, like, I've had any of these interactions with who I haven't been happy to be like, no, I'll explain where I'm coming from. And also with all of these people, including, by the way, the worst of the Loser Brigade, I was completely respectful. I'm always completely respectful until they're shitty to me, but just don't. And I think that's maybe maybe I'm rambling a little too much, but you know, Reed, like the first time we had the show and Jeremy on the show, and I think a lot of you guys were like, man, but you go hard at these guys. You know, like you're kind of a dick on Twitter. But if you look at my shit, and I really think this is the truth, I don't. With the exception of libertarians defending the COVID regime or defending the warfare state, in which case I do go hard. I cannot stand anyone carrying the flag of libertarianism defending the COVID regime.
Meghan McCain and you know, Marianne Williamson and Dan Crenshaw stuff, so I can't judge. But
that's different. That's different. I'm talking about internal libertarian stuff.
Right.
If there's someone who says, I'm a libertarian, but they start making excuses for the COVID regime or for the warfare state, that is my line. That drives me absolutely nuts, and I might attack those people. But with the exception of them, I'm never initiating the fucking thing. I don't just go out of my way to fucking attack other libertarians. Right. But if they come at me, I meet them with equal fucking, you know, levels of you know, response. And that's a lot of times people see that and they're kind of like, whoa, dude, why are you getting into this thing? But it's like, I don't know, dude. If you come at me like that, then I'm going to come at you in the same with the same attitude. And some people see that and think that it's like, oh, you're a bully. But to me, I see that as it's like, no, I'm just not a bitch. Like if you want to talk shit, like, okay, let's deal with this.
This is your New York upbringing. Cause my stepdad raised me. He was from New York. He built it into me. I'm the same exact way. Like I really don't pick fights with other libertarians except for it really not even anti-war. Cause like all libertarians are really pretty good on war, but the COVID regime shit, there has been plenty of libertarians that have disappointed me, and I'll fucking eviscerate them. I don't give a shit. But well, other than that, Other than that, it's just people that attack me, and it's,
and then,
it's
right. And then if they, or I'll say, or if they attack my friends, like, is, yes. like that is a thing I just can't Same. Fucking say. Especially I'm when loyal, I know man. My friends are good people. Like right. it's like, no, I'm not going to sit here while you do that. That's not. Yeah. That's not right.
So Dave,
hey, speaking of, oh, go ahead, Reed. I was just okay, going to say, gotta, speaking of people attacking libertarians out of nowhere and supporting the Knapp violation, what you talked about, splitting these hairs on religion, guys, I don't know if you know or not, but politics is a waste of time. Definitely shouldn't do that. Instead, I have a proposal for you guys. What if we, what if we set up a community, a covenant community, separate, where we could defend our Christian values and take up arms, and maybe we put it in East Texas, and yeah, and the government will just leave us alone.
I always knew you were David Koresh. I'm good with that. Honestly, like if there's any libertarians out there that feel that way, just sure. go fucking do it.
Right. I guess yeah. my point is that you're starting to see these post-libertarians come at the work we're doing at what is essentially the top of the sales funnel. And they can't grasp the fact that we are using a platform to change hearts and minds. And I don't care if you get a 100 well-armed people in a commune and a covenant community, they will burn it to the ground. The state does not give a fuck about your computer money. I own crypto. I believe in it as the future. But let's not pretend that you can do this with a couple thousand people. And we are their recruiting arm. That is what our mission is, as I see it. And that's one of the more frustrating things, because they tend to believe what we believe, and we're fighting over methods. I mean, yeah. Jesus.
Well, I think that with most of the post-libertarian crowd, and I guess there's a bunch of different guys in there, so I don't want to like kind of lump them in, and it's kind of hard to take on each person's arguments. I'm doing a show. I'm doing a debate, or maybe not exactly officially billed as Something. A debate, but with Jason Stapleton tomorrow night on Lions of Liberty. So I'm gonna, you know, I'll talk to him about some of this stuff and see how that all goes. But every one of them kind of has their own different thing. I think a lot of those guys are getting a little big for their britches and really, you know, kind of pretend I have this whole philosophy that has figured this whole thing out. And, you know, I'm not, I don't want to like, you know, whatever. I've already kind of like had my back and forths with a couple of those guys. But if you just kind of like read the Machiavellians 6 months ago and now think you understand everything about the world, I don't know. I read it years ago and it's a really good book. It's really interesting, but I don't know that you know everything that's ever existed now.
There's definitely an ego streak in that.
Yes. And yeah. like a wild ego streak. And by the way, as someone who has an ego, but it's like still keep it in mind. I still like kind of give other people credit and realize like some right. of these ideas are, you know, anyway, whatever. I think that when it comes down to it, what you're going to have to argue, if what you're looking for is a future with more liberty, right? If you're in that ballpark, whatever the broad strokes of like we're here and there's less liberty here and there's more liberty here. If you want to live in a situation where there's more liberty, I think the only way you get there is if you convince more people that we should be there. Yes. You know, like Period. You convince more people that liberty is the way to go. And if you just reduce it all to that fundamental point, I think it's very hard to counter. It's very hard to argue that we get to a situation with more liberty if less people believe in liberty. And then you'd have to almost go that, like, yes, convincing more people that liberty is the way to go is better than not. And what we're in the business of doing is convincing more people of, like, look, this is what libertarians have to offer. This is what we believe in, and this is like something that you maybe should consider as well. And if you want to shit on that, fine. But the only thing, and I want to hear what you have to say, Clint, but the only thing I'll say that, you know, is like what's going on with the Mises Caucus in the Libertarian Party, and not just the Mises Caucus, it's bigger than that. It's more like the real liberty movement within the Libertarian Party, there's something that you might notice that's like, again, maybe I'll attack some of these people in response. You know, if they come at us, I'll respond to them. But I'm not going out of my way to fucking attack agorists. I'm not going out of my way to attack Liberty Republicans. I'm not going out of my way to attack, you know, the Jason's wealth, power, and influence. I'm not going out of my way to attack post-libertarians in general. It's just not really a thought on my mind. But all of them obsessively attack the Mises Caucus. And yes. Why is that? Why is it that you guys feel... And the obvious answer is because we have the juice. And that we are really like...
You've destroyed their worldview.
Well, we're the only ones who have the real excitement and energy and influence and all of these things. That's where all of this is going. And so they all constantly feel like they have to fucking attack what we're doing to get... But again, it's like, so go do what you do and show me. Like I said before, I don't care. The Libertarian Party is just a fucking mode of transportation. It's a skateboard. Yeah. And if someone comes by with a bike, jump on that bike. I don't care. Whatever gets you to fucking liberty. That's what's really important. But you guys are sitting there like kind of on your knees scrapping by as we ride by on a bike saying that bike sucks. It's like, all right. So then you fucking get there and show me. Show me what's
right. The irony of them, you know, advocating for wealth, power, and influence when they constantly attack the guy who probably has the most of it, you know, like, and you. I mean, it's just bizarre. But to steel man them, I think that they wouldn't actually disagree with the idea that we need to convert more people to seeing the world the way we do. Obviously, that's their intention. That's what they're trying to do, too. Yeah. They just think that their way is correct. And I don't blame them. If you think you're correct, that's fine. But fucking win on the merits of the argument. You don't have to attack us. You don't have to make us... I don't view us as enemies, honestly. I think that they present some interesting ideas. I think that Popular Liberty's got some really interesting ideas about local takeovers of governorships and all. It's like yeah, okay, but
I like Andrew a lot. I think he's cool, and I don't know. I haven't to be completely honest, I have not really spent the time on learning the thing he's preaching the most. What's it called?
Archotropism,
right? So yeah. I haven't I heard him present it once and I was not convinced. But yeah. I didn't really to be fair, I only listened to about 15 minutes of him present it. And so I probably to give it a full to really flush it out, I'd have to listen to some more of it. But right. I think he's a good dude, and I know he's me and him have messaged back and forth a few times, and I like him, and I consider all those guys like my people. Like, okay, we're all going for the same thing. Yeah. We all want the same thing, and maybe there's something there that's really powerful. I don't know, but I just think that we're going to be stronger with numbers and we're going to be stronger with the more people who even like see things in the way we do. And almost like everyone, like I bet all four of us would have to acknowledge, it takes something to get you to see things the way we do. And that's kind of what I'm in the business of. So it almost seems to me like if this is the Matrix, you know, analogy, like I'm in the business of going and like red pilling people, and you're trying to fight with me over what red pilled people should do. And this isn't a conflict. We're not
talking about the same thing.
This isn't a conflict. Well, okay, whatever. Maybe you're right about this or you're right about this. I don't know. Or maybe you're all right, you know, but I'm just trying to red pill more and more people, and we're going to be stronger the more people we have. So yeah, that's what I'm in it for.
Yeah, appreciate the contribution, regardless of the differences of opinions. That's how I feel about Andrew. I'm like, I don't actually agree with his ideas either. I think that archotropism has some really good ideas, and I think there's some areas where he's way overconfident, and I don't think that they're actually able to be accomplished. That's my opinion. I could be proven wrong, but I don't look at the guy and go like, "Fuck you! You got 5% of this wrong." I go, "Well, that's awesome that you're thinking outside of the box. You're trying to progress liberty. God bless. Now stop talking shit." You know, like.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I mean, I feel like they're the loser brigade of the right, and I'm gonna, I mean, like, they're just so demeaning to you if you disagree with them on something and they have like this uppity, snotty, like, I know everything, you're a retard, yep. You know, so instead of calling you a racist or a Nazi, they just call you a midwit, or, you know, say you don't know what you're talking about. So I don't know. I find them.
Yeah, but that's
I've had more of Reed's experience.
But just to be fair, okay, I'll say this. I'm sure there are some people on the post-libertarian, you know, side who fall into that. But that was a really big difference. Yeah, but there's also a really big difference between calling someone dumb and calling them a Nazi. You know, so like there is a big difference between that. One is kind of like dismissive of your idea, and the other is like a vicious attack on your character, invoking a genocide to, you know, like kind of get you. And I think that they're definitely more intelligent on the post-libertarian side than on the loser brigade side. I mean, that's, I think everyone would agree with that.
We should just call them the winner brigade.
Well, yeah, there you go. So
maybe they would leave us alone. Like, but, stroke that ego, baby.
But look, I mean, there's there's almost no one who's even like, I mean, I don't know, reasonably bright on the loser brigade. They're all just like fucking like very, you know, very unimpressive people.
Actually, I will say I hate her guts, but Breonna Coyle is very smart. I hate her, but she is.
Oh,
smart.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, her. She's the only one I haven't talked to.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her.
The way I see that post-libertarian group, though, is like if you guys ever played sports, remember that kid who quit on like day two? The entire time he was like rooting against the team, you know, right. From that day forward. I feel like that is what's happened with this post-libertarian crowd, is they went through enough shit in the Star Wars years or whatever, and or they saw enough and they go, I did my best. Politics must not work, right? And now they see some people coming along and they go, oh shit, they might prove me wrong. And nobody likes to be proven wrong. And so they've painted themselves into a corner by hating the LP. So any success of the LP is going to almost feel like an attack on them.
Yeah, I also think that there's, I don't know, there's a lot of people who have kind of, I think a lot of them are like very enchanted with Curtis Yarvin. And there's something, I get it, there's something like enchanting about that guy. Like, I don't know how much time you guys have ever, like, you know, spent reading or listening to him. Like, he's an interesting dude. And his understanding of history is really unbelievable. And his kind of like verbal ability and kind of like his ability to break down different layers to how our system operates and make you kind of examine them in a different way, that is, it's all very valuable. I've just always thought that his actual, when it comes down to it, his arguments and critiques of libertarianism are very lacking, and that his and so that's like where I'm always kind of like, okay, but where's the there, you know, like if you're gonna say, okay, I used to be a Rothbardian Hoppian but now I'm not. And then it's always kind of vague and like, well, why exactly? Like, because everything else kind of fits in. It's just, what's the point there? And then there's something like they almost get enchanted with that guy and they're all trying to do their own version of him. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. But the problem is that they're doing this version that's like, you're just not up to snuff. Yeah. Like, you haven't really, I know you've read like three books that you think are that he recommended or something, but you're just not like really at that level. And so that was like, you know, there was a lot.
He's like their Bill Hicks or their David Tell, you know?
Yeah. Well, all right. David Tell was not a Bill Hicks guy. What do you mean?
No. I'm saying that a lot of stand-up comics.
Or David Tell.
A lot of stand-up comics like
that.
Very
I get. So. Yes. 100%. But like, so I don't know. I watched, when, Jason Stapleton's, assistant debated, Angela McCardle, and, I mean, he's just saying a whole bunch of shit that you're like, yeah, dude, I don't know. I read those books too, but you just got this all wrong. And you got to read like seven more books that'll disprove these three that you've read. I it's all, you know, like.
It's like arguing with a Muslim who tells you you have to read the Quran in Arabic.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Well, he was making this argument that that he's like, regimes are their most deadly when they think they're going to collapse. And that's why you don't want to try to collapse a regime, and you don't want to fight them, because when they collapse, that's when they go genocidal. And he's kind of obviously referring to the Nazis. And it's like, yes, that did happen with the Nazis. Like, the Nazis went genocidal when they were on the verge of defeat in the middle of World War II. But then you're like, yeah, but you know what? The Soviets went genocidal when they were at their strongest.
Yeah.
And then they dissolved pretty peacefully. So, here's one more example from history that shatters your entire... You know, it's like a lot of these people, they talk with, like, these certainties. And then you're like, oh, no, there's actually a lot more nuance to all of this. It's not as black and white as, like, I know there's one great book, and you're all in on that one. But, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of
different
things.
I got a great example for you. On my road trip, I was listening to The Fourth Turning, and it's super compelling. The entire first half of it's really, really compelling, and you're like, oh my god, everything's a cycle, it's all inevitable, you can see it coming. And then you realize that this book was written in 1999 or something like that, and they lay out their predictions for the next 20 years, and they get so much shit wrong, like terribly, terribly wrong, right? And then you're like, right, oh well, all of these assertions based off of patterns turned out to be false. Now, could it happen in the next decade? Sure, but they were wrong about that window.
And here's the thing: when you want to believe, you can just focus on all the shit that they got right.
Exactly.
And then you can really speak. And look, this is something that, you know, it's kind of the power of sales or something like that. But when you speak in certainty, you can really convince people that, like, wow, well, this guy's so certain that we must be certain. But a lot of these guys, it's like, just don't really, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that makes you a...
They're not predicting the fucking future. They don't know what's going to fucking happen. And so they're using all of those, that trickery to convince people, trying to persuade people, that's not important to persuade people. And like, it's like, okay, well, then stop trying to persuade people. If it's not important at all. You know, I saw, and well, I'm sure this will come up tomorrow, but I saw Jason Stapleton literally quote tweet David Hines and say, you guys aren't even worth talking about. Like, okay. Well, then stop fucking talking about us, man. Like, what are we doing here? Like, all right. Yeah, if we're not worth talking about, then shut up and move on. Okay. But you know who's really not worth talking about? All you guys. I never talk about you. Like, I don't know. If you guys weren't coming at me, I would never mention this. I would even think about it at all.
Well, that's the method to their madness. That's the whole reason they come at you.
That's why, I mean, you're right, they are way more intelligent, and they're more intelligent than me too, by the way, or more knowledgeable on what they're talking about than I am. But it's what I'm talking about. Like, they wouldn't really have an audience, and they wouldn't really have any attention if it wasn't for just getting people to bite back at them. And that's all they try to do. Look, is get people angry and to lash out at them.
And I also don't like, and I'm sure some of this will come up tomorrow night, but I don't have anything against someone who goes like, I'm out of it. I'm out of all of this. I'm done, and I'm just going to try to live the best life I can fucking live you know, make as much money and take care of my family and all that.
Carrie Wetzler is not attacking the Mises Caucus every day. She's just doing her videos and talking about, you know.
Do that. And even if you're just like, I don't even want to talk about this stuff on videos. I don't care. Yeah. I'm not going to care about politics anymore. Sure. I get that. I have nothing against that.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. There's lots of people. Those are probably some of the best people out there in the country are people who, like, just don't even care about any of this shit. So fine, go do that. You know, like, that's fine. But I really care about this liberty shit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep talking about it. And also I'm just kind of fascinated by all of this. So I'm going to keep talking about it. And I think it's important. And I also think that anyone who's, you know, it's funny because they're like flirting with these ideas and they think these ideas are really powerful. But then they're also going to tell us that like ideas aren't powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's silly to me. So this is like, you know,
yeah.
Like ideas change the world, yep. and ideas are powerful. And the only other thing I would say is that there is in the post-libertarian, again, I'm not an expert on all of this, and there's a bunch of different people who have different views on this, but the idea that they're like, it doesn't matter to try to wake up the masses. You know, it doesn't matter to try to wake up people and introduce them to these ideas. And you're like, okay, well, you know who really disagrees with you is the fucking ruling elite. Because they really think it's important to propagandize the masses. So why is it that they think it's so important? You know, it's not like they're just like, they didn't just say, okay, New World Order is here and everyone has to get a vaccine and everyone has to lock down and all of this. They had to go 15 days to flatten the curve and then have this huge mm-hmm. propaganda campaign to get us all into this, right? So why do they think it's so important to propagandize people if it doesn't matter what people think? So if I'm out there in the business of red pilling people and waking them up and you know, kind of destroying the propaganda, who are you to tell me that doesn't matter? When clearly the people who are doing all this evil shit know that it matters. Yep. Otherwise, mm-hmm. they spend fucking like hundreds of billions of dollars on propaganda campaigns. Of course it fucking matters. Why is there, I don't know if you saw it, my wife showed me earlier today, this Fauci movie that's out about how Fauci is this great dude or whatever. Like they of course, they think it matters. It's going to go like
Cuomo's book.
Well, God, hopefully. But, you know, it's like they think it fucking matters. They spend a lot of time doing that. So I don't know. I think you're wrong. And maybe you haven't figured it all out.
The crazy thing is that they are wrong because you could just point at them. All of them know about this because of Ron Paul. All of them. Yeah.
Well, that's a big 100%. Thing, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just transparent that they were woken up by Ron Paul. And now they've turned around after they got in the lifeboat. They've turned around and said, everybody left on shore. Fuck them. You know, it's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I agree.
Well, thanks for coming on, Dave. We're over an hour and a half, which is what I asked you to come on for. But we all talked at Freedom Fest, and Dave is going to make us his bodyguards when he runs for president, whether or not he likes it. It's happening.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm gonna get killed.
Yeah. Yeah. None of us are great at running.
You
got about 30 yards out of us.
I just feel like you guys are going to be my bodyguards and someone's going to shoot and you're just going to hold me in front of you.
No.
Like, oh, never. Get him.
Never. I'll shove Maj Touré in front of you.
There you go.
But, Maj will be a great bouncer. That dude's ready to rock.
By the way, Maj, unblock me. I'm sorry.
I got links. Black
don't crack. That's why he would.
Does Maj not like you? All right, I'm gonna work on that.
There you go. Yeah, I appreciate that. He told one of my female friends to suck his dick one time over a conflict, and I was like, "Hey, buddy, that's not very nice." And he blocked me. So,
Maj is a good dude. Is he gonna tell some chicks to suck his dick every now and then? Sure, but he's a good dude. All right, everyone. Agreed. Everyone has a chance to grow and change.
Let me just do one plug before we get out of here. There's going to be the Sayulita Super Spreader event December 10th through 12th in Sayulita, Mexico. It's myself, Robbie the Fire, Michael Rechtenwald, Martha Bueno, Buck Johnson, and yeah. Oh, and Johnny Profita. So yeah, if you guys want to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. So
Dave, you got Jason Stapleton tomorrow. Anything else coming up on the horizon?
Oh no, I got a baby coming soon, so I'm gonna be laying low for a little bit. I'm glad we got this one done here, but I'm not gonna be able to do too much for the next couple months. But part of the problem, at Comic Dave Smith on Twitter, but besides that, yeah. And then tomorrow night I'm doing the Lions of Liberty one with Jason Stapleton. But I love you three guys, and thank you guys for everything tonight. And after that, give me a couple months and I'll be back in the swing of things.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, man.
There's the reason I haven't been called a Nazi yet is because I have been too busy with the baby.
You're the only one who doesn't have a show and hasn't had Ryan Dawson on it in the stream, so that's why you.
Yeah, that's also true.
Make sure
you can catch me occasionally on the Brian Nichols show.